Hi, you're listening to Switch On, a podcast to shape the principles of modern leadership. We will be discussing the real experience with successful leaders and learn from them how are they tackling real-life, real-time challenges and build on their learnings for tomorrow's success. In this series, we'll focus on how we are bringing vision to life. Having a purpose, a vision alone, is not enough to be successful. Both require action. Without action, vision is nothing more than a dream. The key to success is to stay focused and be realistic about the current situation, and then learn perfect along the way. But as soon as we identify it, we need to start living it. Welcome to this episode of Switch On. It isn't enough for leaders to define the vision of an organization. Today's leaders need to actively participate in the effort to make their vision a reality. Organizations that are focused, resilient, responsive, adaptable, versatile, and able to sustainably innovate are successful. Taken together, these traits are known as business agility. Business agility enables organizations to innovate and deliver more effectively, and this way turn market disruptions into a competitive advantage while thriving in a complex environment. Driven by a supportive culture, a vision that inspires, and a committed team that continually challenges the status quo and looks for better ways of doing things. I'm honored to have a conversation about this topic with the business agility transformation expert, who advises organizations on how to harness technological potential to increase business performance and new business opportunities. An expert who sees a greater opportunity in leveraging diversity and inclusion to break records in team performance and to cultivate, attract, and retain talent. Alessandro Cugno Garano, Senior Executive Partner at Gartner. Welcome, Alessandro.
Thanks, Elena. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Alessandro, can you tell us what is your ambition and what drives you?
Yes, sure. I'm Alessandro Cugno Garano, and as you said, I'm a senior executive partner in Gartner, that is an advisory firm. And what I do for business is very much advising leaders in a medium or large organization to fulfill their goals. And nowadays, this is very much about transformation, as we call it. It's about adaptation, changes, and so on. When I do what I do for business, I tend to focus my talents, my advisory, not in suggesting how to do stuff to people, because I mean these people are smart, and this company are most of the cases very much prepared. It's very much about discussing and learning together what they should not do, instead of how to do everything. What drives me and you were having a dialogue about the enormous changes that are happening in today's world. We have been talking about how we could craft a new future work, how the future may look like in the way we work, in the way we interact, in the way we live our social life. And this is very much what is inspiring me, driving me. I'm very much curious about how, as a society, we will unfold the existing challenges to turn the future of work into something that is positive, that, you know, they say old habits die hard. So this is actually very much what is triggering me, is about reinventing, rethinking about the future of work in business, but also in the way we live. This forced discontinuity what we went through, it's a big reset. And of course, it's about evolution, it's about transformation. You can also call it about a digital transformation or business agility transformation or whatever, but it's about essentially evolution.
Very, very important topics that you're raising, because what we are experiencing today is the impact of unexpected, a moment of discontinuity that is deeply touching business operations and organizational capacity to grow and prosper. In fact, it's nothing new. There were and always will be unplanned business disruptions. What is different in my view is that now we are faced with managing the emergency by constantly adapting our response while we are simultaneously preparing for the next unpredictable moment that can put our business at risk. Alessandro, what is your sense of leadership mindset and behaviors as they take their companies through this transition from one S-curve to the next?
You're absolutely right that we always went through constant evolution and changes and whatsoever. Maybe the thing that is a little bit more different compared to the past, or maybe it is simply something that we haven't yet realized, is the continuity and the discontinuity. So the rate of change is constantly increasing. Now we are very much focused about what is happening with the COVID and these gigantic and very painful changes that we all went through. What I'm trying to say is that I think we forgot that before COVID, we had many other changes. I'm talking about what happened from a societal perspective, from an economical perspective. So the rate of change over the last 5, 10, 20, 50 years is constantly increasing and will increase even more. Now, why is this important considering to the leadership dilemma that you mentioned before? Because it's not given, it's not easy to feel and to be prepared for the continuity of discontinuities. So one of the things that is the most important today in the way we do our business, in the way I work, in the way you work, in the way leaders of organization work, is to be adaptable. And to be adaptable, comes with the obsession to set a direction, maybe not a destination, and to have the mindset, the approach, the operating model, the culture, to go through a never-ending series of learning loops. So that's the reason why some describe business agility as the combination of operational agility and strategic agility. Now, if you think about this last point, Elena, we cannot say that we were used to strategic agility because big companies are more or less working to extend, expand, improve a very well-defined operating model and business model that has been proved successfully over years. Now, what is happening today is that we are forced to be adaptable and to be strategically agile because you cannot control the context around you, you know? And this essentially means, from a leadership perspective, to be adaptable from a strategic perspective, to be agile in the way you unfold your strategy through a never-ending series of learning loops to confirm your hypothesis, accelerate, decelerate, and so on. I mean, one of the things that I'm always repeating to my clients is that agility is not only about speed. No, there are so many people that are talking about speed these days, but no one wants to be quick in failing. So the key point is about being adaptable and extremely good in accelerating and decelerating based on your learning loops. This is not about speed, but responsiveness.
Well said. It seems that the level of risk we need to accept is actually rising. The economic uncertainty that you're mentioning, competitive threats, cost inflation, all present a risk to business performance. And there is also a question of how realistic companies are about their potential growth and what it can be. When we talk about growth, it often means efficiency, operational agility, faster, cheaper, better, like you've mentioned. And many people spend years trying to recapture the growth that they were used to by optimizing their go-to-market. And this approach may not be able to get them back to 40, 50% growth that they were used to. Yet digital transformations that are focused on the provision of value also leads to better financials and growth by delivering this value. How to find the right balance between seeking stability and transformation journey to create the future?
That's an interesting dilemma, Elena. And I think I'm going to give you my opinion about what I'm observing. Many companies are trying to become multimodal in the way they operate their business. Mm-hmm. You know, we're living in a world where we are talking about a digital business, digital operating model. We are talking about digitizing the way we work and so on. But if you go one step deeper in the thinking about it, many companies are running profitable or less profitable compared to the past, and they are operating in a way that they've always been doing. Many companies are essentially running their business where the core business, their business model, is pretty well defined into a perimeter. And that's about improvement. And you're right, I mean, efficiency is very important, and there is nothing bad to be focused on efficiency. And today, in 2022, you can actually be extremely innovative in being efficient, because you can actually use so many ingredients from a technological perspective, and you can be transformative in the way you bring efficiency within the borders of a pretty well-defined business model that is nothing new. It's all what you've always been doing, and that's it. And that's one part of the story. But then there is a second part of the story that is actually quite intriguing, because every company was a startup once upon a time. And that was the time where the company actually invented, before scaling, the current business model and the current operating model that they are operating. No? That part of the company is the one that has to be regenerated through transformation, evolution, or whatever you may like to call it. And that's the part of the company that is constantly today trying to look for the next pot of gold, the next, the new core, the next business model that will actually develop in symbiosis in parallel to the existing business model. Now, that part of the story, that part of a company ecosystem, is something very, very different, but in a way it doesn't play any role in improving the business. Now, so what I'm trying to say is, of course, efficiency and effectiveness in operating a business model where you're dominant and you want to prolong the life cycle is and will always be important. But more and more companies are also trying to redevelop internal capability, internal competence, internal ability to redefine your business model, so that in the future, companies will run multimodal. One that maybe is at the end of the life cycle, another one that is scaling because it has proved to be very promising, and many others that are in the incubation mode. You know? Well, many companies are trying to do this, but it's extremely important because it's about moving out of your comfort zone, moving out from your core, and work and think and act multimodal. Mm-hmm.
It's a complex environment, and it's nice to hear that there needs to be a bridge between efficiency on one side and effectiveness on the other side. I think many companies are still struggling to build up the basis and then evolving to the next steps where they can really focus on what is important. And in your view, Alessandro, why should we be obsessed with business agility in this kind of environment?
Well, I don't know if people should be obsessed about business agility. I think we should be focused on a constant evolution for a series of reasons. One is because when you run your business in this adaptive way, we spoke about operative agility, strategic agility, and so on. When you run, when you're going through the changes that will bring you eventually to run a business in an agile way, to be adaptable whatsoever, there are many good things that will happen. One other thing that is very important, Elena, I believe, is that to be fully aware that we are living in a world where one of the scarcest resources that we have to manage wisely is talents. No? Mm-hmm. And when you build an ecosystem that is driven by business agility, this becomes a magnet for digital talents, essentially. And this also comes with a financial positive collateral, no? Meaning everyone could actually fight in the world of talents, but to do a journey to rebuild talents and to acquire talents at light speeds requires to be very good in something and to make this journey economically sustainable. So business agility becomes a magnet for digital talents. That's one of the reasons. why I believe we should be focused on business agility. There is also another aspect that is, I believe is also important, that is the topic about innovation. So innovation in general, these days, is pretty cheap if you think about prototyping. No? Mm-hmm. So all companies are doing innovation in a prototyping way. But very few companies are actually scaling innovation, meaning making business, making money out of this. So business agility and agility scaled, meaning agility brought to the level of strategy and adapting strategies, is very important because it is introducing an operative model that is designed to regenerate new core business, to scale innovation beyond the pretty prototypes that every company has. And then another aspect that I believe is very important is the cultural part of the story. So every company has a culture these days, but the culture is very much the shadow of the leadership that went through the years in a specific company. When you start to work and you transform into something that should become more agile from a business perspective, when you're really targeting anti-fragility, when you have that level of ambition, you are forcing yourself to redefine the culture for the next jump ahead. No? So it's about recoding your culture based on what you want to be your company for the next 5, 10, 20 years. So business agility in this context is very important because it is forcing you to rethink about the culture. And it's also introducing a language, a way of working, behaviors, way of operating that are forcing you to change the culture in a sense. So it's an acceleration for cultural adoption. And then there are actually many other reasons why we should be a little bit, as you mentioned before, obsessed, maybe focused on business agility transformation. And the last bit that I would like to share with you is that there are things in the overall context that you cannot control anymore. So the rate of changes are increasing. We will have to be ready for the continuity of discontinuities. So when you cannot control the context around you, what you need to put and to put in place is a way to run your business that is based on continuous feedback loops. No? So you can set a direction, maybe not a destination, and you can go through these series of learning loops to confirm your assumption and accelerate or decelerate and so on and so forth.
Digital business remains a top priority, and we are seeing it everywhere we look at. And having invested so much in digital transformations that you mentioned earlier over the past 12 to 18 months, enterprises are now really validating their strategy to ensure ROI, and they are shifting their focus to the role of technology beyond IT. So technology integration infused in a way that drives business outcomes. And the other day, when we have discussed this topic, you have mentioned you are noticing a fraction, a division between what to do and how to do it. Tell me more about the shifts that you're noticing and what are the main challenges business are facing with technology integration in your view?
When we spoke about this, Elena, what I meant was that in general, big companies and successful companies have the luxury of doing pretty much everything they think they should be doing. What I actually see is that in the journey of transformation, one of the most important things is actually to define why you're doing what you're doing. So really the purpose for the transformation, the inspiring North Star that is setting the direction, and also the priorities that are connected to this vision. Because once you set a vision and you have the priorities, it becomes feasible to do something that that we are not used to. Let's put it in this way, from a generational perspective in big companies. We are not used to decide what we will not do. Mm? So deciding what you will not do is actually the essence of strategy. And this is actually very important from a transformation perspective, because if you're not very clear, not only about the vision, the direction, but also the priorities of what you will not do, then you get into the syndrome of doing everything. And you focus on how to do stuff. Mm? One of the paradoxes that I'm observing in companies that are extremely good companies with talented and smart people is that if you don't prioritize what you want to do by defining what you will not do, you may become overwhelmed by the massive amount of changes and all the nitty-gritty details and all the portfolio of changes that you want to do. And you cannot do all those things with a decent level of quality and a decent level of impact. And the reason for that is very simple. There is a limit to the change that a company can take in a specific moment. Plus, as we mentioned before, one of the scarcest resources that we need to manage smartly today are the talents. Many companies today are actually very rich in terms of capitals. Not many companies have the luxury to be very rich in terms of talent. So what defines the path to go through is the ability to understand how to maximize the value contribution that you can find from a very limited set of talents in your transformation. And this comes through prioritization. Companies that are simply trying to execute and thinking about how to do stuff. How to do stuff is part of the learning journey. And you can improve. You don't have to be perfect in how you do things from day one. What is important is to have a very clear direction, very good priorities, and the learning loops that would make you better along the journey. That's what I meant when we last time spoke about the fraction and the friction between trying to do everything right and doing the right things right. That is a totally different ballgame.
It's so important what you have just shared, right? Breaking down the change in manageable steps. It makes it so much more effective in terms of execution and focusing the resources where you really want to implement the strongest change in your organization. Because with the uncertainty that we are facing and the flexibility we need to adapt to this environment, in my view, a linear way of working is not sufficient anymore. And given this rapid pace of change in most markets, a high-performing culture aligned with a strategy is more important than ever. And culture may seem intangible, but the results of successful cultural change really matter. How are you experiencing, Alessandro, the culture code shift that companies are going through, and what development should we expect going forward?
Yeah, this is one of the topics that keeps me busy most of the time these days, and I think it's gonna be a major mainstream movement for the time ahead. Because Helena, every company has a specific culture, at least defining in the website with the values and principles that are fancy, very deep. But in some companies that I observe, the principle, the values, the beliefs have been diluted over time. So essentially what happens is that, again, in a context of discontinuity, you may have many, many scenarios. You may have companies with a very strong culture and people that are living this culture. So there is a consistency between the culture and the way that people work on, the people behave, the language they use. But maybe that culture is what you brought you there, but it's not what you believe is totally right to bring you to the next 20 years of hyper success or whatsoever. And there are companies that are actually going through the dilemma on how to update and recode a culture that has been extremely successful to bring you where you are, but you get a feeling that something has to be twisted for the future. Then there are other companies, and many other companies, that are actually living subcultures that are actually not connected to the official culture defined by the values and the principles that you paint on the walls, that you put on the websites and whatsoever. Now, that's an interesting situation to be in, because as I'm used to say, the culture is more or less the shadow of the leadership that went through the history of a company. So, and these shadows is there because it's driven by leadership. Leaders bring the weather, they say. So sometimes what happens is that you have a fraction, a distance between different subcultures, so different ways people talk, live, act, behave, and the official culture. And in a context of transformation, this is extremely difficult because culture is what actually maximizes the performance of a team in a complex system. So if you really got the culture wrong, or you simply don't know what your culture is, it's going to be extremely difficult to maximize the value that you can get out of your human workforce and your company. So when companies are actually dealing with this level of dilemma, so they get a feeling that there are subcultures and there is not an homogeneous, a compelling, future-proof culture, then the typical journey that I recommend people to companies to go through is to rediscover what your culture should be by decoding, maybe as example, the culture from the big digital giants. And so it's like standing on the shoulders of giants. When you look and you see and you decode how digital giants, digital dragons are actually working, living, and operating, and you get to the code, you get to the base, you get to the culture code, then in many cases you get to the aha moment, because I understand how it is possible that they do what they do. When you look and when you see, you understand, you decode the code of their culture. I'm saying this, Elena, because at the end of the day, companies that are doing this very, very right, they are totally focused on culture by continuously crafting, developing, updating the culture, because culture is the product. It's the product of leadership. The companies who do this very, very right is also because they have a very strong belief that if they do this very, very right, many good things will happen. Because culture is the most systemic dimension of change in a very complex world, the world of business that we live in.
Why do you consider it so critical today that we question assumptions and consider the alternatives? And how about being open enough to look outside of your day-to-day box and look for new ideas, new perspectives, maybe new best practices to learn from?
To be focused on getting someone else's perspective is extremely important these days, because we are not living anymore in a world where the on top of the pyramid, at the leadership level, you got all the knowledge and all the great ideas. You know, if you roll back the times, maybe 10 or 20 years ago, and that's very much connected to the process of scaling a business and to make it profitable, and people are growing and they're making their own career and then becoming manager, then becoming executive leaders. And they know exactly what their business is about, and they are on top of the pyramid. So there was an area where the competence density was maximized at the top of the pyramid. Today, it cannot be that way. I mean, technology is democratized, competence is distributed. Very likely, the guy or the young lady that will change the way you run your business, it's someone that is hidden virtually in an office space somewhere in the world. So competence is distributed, talent is distributed. And I think it's a very strong assumption to think that you know more than others what you need to do. This is very much connected, Helena, with the concept of inclusion and diversity and equity. No? Inclusiveness is very important because you need to get someone else's feedback and to put it into your equation and to cross-fertilize learning. And diversity of perspective is extremely important because without the diversity, you will be able to capture more insights, more perspective, more lateral thinking that will make your learning process richer, deeper, wider. What I'm trying to say is that to be focused on the diversity of perspective with respect and care and inclusiveness is absolutely important in the process of rediscovering, rethinking the way you've always been working on one side, and that's about improvement, but also to think about what's next, the future, the innovation part of the story.
Well said. As companies push their digital acceleration, people's experience is becoming central to everything. We are already seeing more attention to human-centric workplace, to purpose, innovation, performance. And IT and HR are at the center stage, focusing on people, whether it is retention, training, hiring, or partnerships. But building this business agility is a journey. You're a strong supporter of systemic evolution. Where do companies need to put more attention to achieve this radical flexibility and also be able to scale?
One of the most important things for companies is to get to the level of understanding, of confidence, that this evolution that we have been talking about and transformation, first of all, it is feasible, but it is a long journey. It's a product, essentially. So the most important thing about thinking systemic is accepting that it's a journey, accepting that there are multiple dimensions of changes that are cross-connected. So it's worth considering the full spectrum, take it as a journey, be extremely focused, dedicate the talents, resources to the transformation journey, but knowing it takes a lot. Another important aspect of thinking systemically is actually to understand that you need to move all these triggers in a systemic way. It doesn't make any sense to be the rock star on one dimension of change. It doesn't make, if you consider multiple dimensions of changes, it could be the talent part of the story, it could be the culture, it could be the operative model, it could be the organization and many others. Today, what I observe, what I see, what I believe, is that it's less relevant to be the rock star in one of those dimensions if you don't consider how these dimensions are cross-connected. Mm? One way to think about this transformation approach is to bring agility into the equation. So to think about multiple dimensions of changes like sub-products of an overall product that is the transformation. Now, you asked me before why this is important, which are the most important things to consider in a systemic approach. And essentially what I'm trying to say, Elena, is that to accept the journey, accept that it's systemic, make sure that you see the big picture and you go through learning sprints in the transformation. And I believe when you do all this together, it's not rocket science, it's complex, it's not complicated. So something is to manage complexity in a system with a systemic approach. Something completely different that I wouldn't recommend is to make it complicated.
And earlier, you already mentioned diversity. And I think people have opened up to the idea that diversity is more than just another buzzword. It's a reality. And inclusion is a choice. And inclusion is all about us. We want to engage. We want to learn. And we actually know we will make mistakes before we get better. It's about making progress. And you said that beautifully earlier. And people are ready to put in the work. But it requires a bit of sensitivity as well, a focus on building bridges to be effective and putting it into action. It doesn't happen without the real work. How do you understand the role of inclusion and diversity when driving real change? How are the two fueling innovation in your view?
This is something that I'm actually studying quite a lot. I cannot say that I'm an expert on this because the more you set yourself as an expert, the more you put yourself in the position that you stop learning. No? And diversity, inclusion, and equity, these kind of three dimensions, three topics are very important. And I'm learning quite a lot. I'm trying to be focused on those aspects because I think it's fair to say that I always recognize that I failed on my experience in really understanding the impact of these topics. Now, we spoke before, Ellen, about the diversity. So the mix of backgrounds, experience, values, and preferences is not only about gender diversity. It's much bigger than that. I think it's fair to say that diversity is it brings you that level of different differentiation, heterogeneous ingredients that will enrich your experience, your perspective. But as we mentioned before, if diversity doesn't come with inclusion, with respect, with care, it doesn't really deliver the full cake of benefits that you would expect. No? So inclusivity is also important because it's very important these days to create a safe environment where individuals are treated fairly, they are actually respected. In my experience, in my career, Many times I recognize the absolute excellence of people that I've been working with, super smart people. Sometimes you get to the feeling that these people are very smart, very, very intelligent, but also rude. And the discussion gets a little bit weird because you get into a toxic environment where people do not feel included. Now, so what I'm trying to say is that diversity, that if it doesn't come with inclusion, doesn't really create the environment where you can really exploit heterogeneous talents around you to get the best out of this. And equity is also absolutely important. Now, there are beautiful researches that have been developed by my colleagues here in Gartner that are making extremely clear that when you combine diversity with inclusion, with equity, very good things happen in terms of business. I'm talking about absolute outcomes in terms of business performance. I'm talking about innovation rates. I'm talking about, and to me, that was an awakening. The relationship between what happens in companies that have a high level of diversity, but low level of inclusion, compared to companies having a high level of diversity and high level of inclusion. When you take those data and out of that data, you extract knowledge, and things becomes more clear. Now, the diversity and the inclusive culture is absolutely important. It is very clear based on data how this is unfolding in financial results and impact from a business perspective. So I'm extremely positive about how this pattern will unfold in terms of benefits for businesses, but also for individuals and also for the society. And I'm pretty sure this is something, Elena, that will keep us busy for the next period of time.
I'm sure. I mean, it's also nothing wrong with learning from failure, learning from each other, and learning along the way while we execute. But how about accountability and ownership in this context? What is the role?
The role of accountability and ownership, that's actually very important because it is, if you think about it, it's very much connected to the way agile organization works. I mean, if you're passionate about agility, if you're curious about business agility, if you are actually studying, learning, exploring how digital giants are actually running their business, the topic about ownership and accountability is embedded in the way their operating model is crafted. They talk about radical product ownership, and so on. So in a concept of transformation, if you take the concept of accountability and ownership within the journey of transforming towards business agility, anti-fragility, this to me comes very much to the point about defining, as we mentioned before, multiple dimensions of change with clear ownership and clear product ownership for every dimension of change. I think another level, another angle of accountability and ownership is something that we touched before, is about distributed leadership. So right. The more you craft a transformation to be pervasive and distributed, the more you actually need to embed ownership in the peripheries or in every peripheries and in every angle of what of the business that you're running. So distributed leadership, distributed talents, distributed ownership is very much important also to remove frictions and to move from a top-down approach to transformation to an open source of transformation. And this is very tricky, Helena, because we talk a lot these days about distributing the ownership of transformation. But one of the things that I'm actually learning is that distributed accountability, distributed ownership, and those kind of things work very nicely if you have a very nice and clear direction given, a purpose, priorities, but also if you have distributed competence, knowledge, talents. If you distribute ownership in a context with very low density of talents in the peripheries, well, very bad things will happen. That's the reason why it's a journey. It's a journey about embedding competence in a distributed way so that you can unfold ownership in a distributed way and make it systemic, make it it comes with time.
Yeah, it was a wake-up call, and it's good that we are realizing that all these topics are really connected while we are trying to become better and also help to improve our business. And I think we all recognize that we need to become comfortable operating in an environment of significant risk, because standing still is not an option. And organizations that embrace experimentation are comfortable with uncertainty and ambiguity. They do not pretend to know all the answers, but the willingness to experiment does also not mean randomly throwing paint at a canvas. They experiment to learn, rather than to produce an immediately marketable product or service, where tolerance for failure is an important characteristic of innovative culture. And when we speak about diversity and inclusive leadership, what should we do more of and what should we do less of? What core practices would you highlight so we can better embrace and explore uncertainty and become more adaptive?
Maybe one other thing that I believe we should do more and more than when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion is to have the curiosity to go to the data and to understand what the problem is. Mm-hmm. What I'm trying to say is that if you take the time to go through the diversity, inclusion, and equity topic and you spend quality time to understand that, you may realize that there are multiple dimensions of problems or depths that you need to hack. And that's very much important. So one of the things that I would recommend always, I'm also recommending myself, is not to lose the curiosity, to go for the data, to understand the data, to derive from data knowledge, and from knowledge intelligence, and from intelligence actually maybe some wisdom to take the right actions. Just to give you an example that I believe is quite important, the problem, for example, of diversity in a systemic way. I have small kids going through the elementary school now, and I'm actually thinking, one of my kids, my daughter, is looking at the future as every kid, big plans, big dreams, and whatever. And when you think about, for example, gender diversity, it's quite interesting to see it's very low, the rate of young women, young girls going through degrees in information technology, in informatics, no? That's interesting, because then if you connect the dots of data, you understand that the reason why we have a very low gender diversity in techie companies is because we are getting something very wrong in terms of pipeline issues, no? If you want to have a fantastic organization leveraging diversity, you need to create the condition, the equity and inclusiveness, they will give everyone the opportunity to develop a career in tech.
Sure.
And this starts with school, no? So what this is something that, to me, I'm not ashamed to say, it was a little bit of an awakening, no? So how you can go to the root cause of a problem to make sure that you don't fall into the trap of short sighting, of short term focusing, when you talk, for example, of gender diversity and whatever, how we can make sure that we are acting systemically in solving the issue, how we can go to the root cause, how we can go to the first principle, which is the first principle, we should get it right. Sometimes when I talk and when I discuss and when we work with my clients about this, you get to the point that maybe the solution is not so complicated. It is more complex than complicated. Mm-hmm. And it will create a long tail of benefits that are systemic. And if you put it on the other side, you can cut the corners and you can go for a very short-term fixes that are giving you the illusion to hack the debt, but will not move the needle in a systemic perspective. To bring all this together, Helena, what I'm trying to say is that one of the things that I'm actually forcing myself to focus always on the root cause and to go back to the first principle ideas, to then understand it, that there is a sweet spot of change that will make it systemically better. Sometimes I succeed in this, sometimes I miserably fail, but that's I guess that's part of the journey.
No, I think you're absolutely right in this thought process, because myself, I'm also going back, right? I try to simplify not make it more complex. I try to find the root cause problem and stop fixing, I call them symptoms, right? But try to solve the problem. And I think it's becoming so much more important. And even if this means that we fix one thing instead of three, five, and prioritize this one thing that is really important, I think we have done so much more versus fighting different battles on different fronts. When we are living in a world that is increasingly dominated by technology and digitalization, yet we've never had this much opportunity to pursue technology-enabled change. I think the role of technology has also radically redefined. It has redefined how we work, how we consume goods, how we innovate, and how value is actually generated. Much has changed. And this raises for me a question, where to next? And I don't mean just in terms of location or direction, but more of an exploration of how value can be found and seized. What is the direction we are moving towards, in your view?
Well, that's another tricky question, Elena.
I'm sorry.
No, but it's a dialogue, and it makes me think, and I like it. What we are actually heading to is to potentially a very positive situation where we will be forced to rethink unlinear, to find a new sweet spot where if everything changes, everything will be dramatically better. So I tend to be positive. And out of the things that we are experiencing, even through the very painful forced digitalization and forced transformation that we all went through with this COVID, I think it's becoming so clear that there are patterns that are actually super promising. And there are dots that when connected will make everything not a little bit different, but way better. I'm not talking about only hybrid work. I'm talking about redefining the future of work and to find a new balance. And, you know, in the preparation of this call, Elena, if you recall it, we were talking about what is the new luxury for digital talents. And the new luxury, I truly believe, is the freedom to decide on what you want to work, where you want to work, and this level of radical flexibility. And it's a luxury because only absolute talents may have the freedom to take a decision on those, no? And this is actually an interesting trigger for big corporation because there is plenty of challenges. We are living in a world where we are in the crisis mode for talent development, talent acquisition, talent retention. And then we have those talents and pure talents that are redefining the norms that they would accept to be part of a company, of a social system. And this is actually the perfect storm to rethink a future of work, a future of business that is more balanced, that is more human, that is more focused on continuous learning and an healthy balance between what we do, how we do it, why we do it, and so on. I'm very much looking forward about how we collectively, from a society perspective, not only big corporation, but each of us, will actually contribute in setting this new scenario. I'm extremely positive. I see so many positive patterns. Of course, there is an inertia that is bringing us back to the old habits, no? Because we have been growing, we have been successfully doing our own career, surfing the old habits that we now want to get rid of. I think it's our own responsibility, so each of us, Elena, to actually give our contribution to define what's coming next in terms of future work and these kind of things. And I'm extremely positive because, as we mentioned before, there are things that you cannot control. Mm-hmm. And the more inertia to put this change, the more you will actually run the risk of losing the big war that is the war for talents.
I agree. I mean, we cannot do it alone. We need to contribute and do it together because the work is becoming much more remote. Teams are becoming much more autonomous. And the idea of a boss is becoming less helpful. Yet we are now in the position to go further and address world-class problems, but we can solve this on our own. And this reminds me of an African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go further, go together. Alessandro, how to nurture the connections with partners everywhere? How do you see this collaboration, co-creation, contribution to the ideas evolving when we are working together, yet not being together in this remote environment?
This is touching another topic that is very much discussed in the emerging business model of the marketplaces, the ecosystem thinking. I'm talking about smart cities, but I'm also talking about open banking and this kind of concepts about building business out of the integration of diversities and different partners. There is definitely a tendency and a curiosity to rethink about how to get together in terms of partnership to build what we call a generative partnership. So to make business together, to join forces, not to get beyond the typical commercial agreement between companies, between partners, but to co-create, co-own, co-sell solution that does not exist. This is something that is becoming more and more prominent and inspiring in the market. And then you also touched based on another topic that is, if I understood it right, you have been talking about how the work getting hybrid is evolving. So the distribution of competencies and how you can actually pick the brain and connects people and connect brains and capacities and understanding in a world that is not anymore constrained into the solid boxes of your offices. No, for this second part, this is actually interesting to observe. It's something that I see. I'm very lucky because I work in a company that is living this digital first dilemma in a very healthy way. And let's put it in this way, in a context of scarcity of a resource. And we all know that in business, if you own the scarcest resource that is on the critical path for your success, you're actually setting the price, no? And in digitalization, the scarcest resources, I believe, are talents and time. So when you talk about talents, you get into the discussion about how to hack your talent strategy and redevelop talent strategies defined for the new world around us. And when you think about the timing, it's very much about reinventing the work, how it is done in your company to remove all this waste and all this unnecessary governance and all those unnecessary processes and unwritten processes that are consuming time. No? But if you move back to the talent part of the story, and if you talk about how can you maximize and how you can manage this scarce resource, it's difficult to avoid talking about accepting, embracing the distribution of talents. So, and the things are getting extremely different from what we used to do in the past years, no? So in the past, we were forcing people to move physically from one zone, from one area of the globe to another area, because these geopolitical forces to move labor forces connected to digitalization were very prominent. Now, after 2 years, almost 2 years of forced digitalization and the hybridization of work, I think we discovered that depending on the work that you do, so it's not about the task, it's about the purpose of the job, you can actually leverage distributed talents that are more or less everywhere in the organization, but also everywhere in the world around us. So the real dilemma is how can you leverage this talent pool that is mostly invisible to the big corporation? I'm talking the talents that exist in everywhere in the world that are absolutely rock stars in what they do, but they are not buying the compromise to relocate to do what they do. And I think there is a huge opportunity there for companies, but still it's so far from the way we've always been touching and managing those elements that it's going to be interesting to see how companies will react to this potential that is huge.
You're so right. We live in a challenging time, but it's also awakening time that has shown us what is right and what is important. And in light of this context, I'm comfortable using the quote from Nadia Jaksambayeva. And she shared a powerful message when she said, "When we embrace the change, we earn the right to choose who we want to be." And today we have touched on many subjects like importance of agility, importance of flexibility, and becoming more adaptive through learning. And they're all connected. Because developing the resiliency muscle means thinking through all the what-ifs. It means the application of continuous learning where reprioritization must happen all the time. And you have raised a very valid point earlier during our discussion, Alessandro. How do we move from doing things right to a point so we can focus on the right things? How do we evolve to win by driving the real change?
I think what is important is to have a frame to decode this complexity. And I'm always using the why, what, and how to be extremely focused on why we are doing what we are doing. So the purpose, that's extremely important, I believe, because it's actually setting a direction. And then to talk about what do we do is also very important because it's about setting the priorities. And then how do we do things? That's actually the fun part of the story, is the creativity in action, but it's also the logical part of execution. So coming back to your point, how do we actually move from trying to do everything right to the right things right? I think is about really setting the why, the purpose. Is about setting the priorities, the definition of success, but also the definition of failure. And then enjoying the journey about going through the how and these continuous feedback loops and to make it inclusive and diverse, to make sure that this is not actually done in a bubble, is not done disconnected from the people that are part of your communities. Because when you connect it, the why, what, and how, you make it inclusive, and you make it as part of a community effort, that actually brings you to the point where the overall adaptive strategy that you build is actually pretty solid. And by the way, I mean, if you got the why right and you got the what clear, so the purpose and the targets, the definition of success, definition of failure, I mean, you can fail on the how, but you can adapt. But if you really craft the why wrong, if you don't focus on that, or if you don't focus priorities, if you don't define what you will not do, if you don't define the success and the failure, then it's pointless to be absolutely right on the how, isn't it?
For sure. Great conclusion. And thank you for reminding us about the importance of the journey. We sometimes tend to forget that as well. And you're so right when you say that the change is constant, and fostering always on development requires these engines of change that generate the change from within. It's time to adapt by rethinking the roles of people, data, and technology. And now we can be bold and reach beyond to the unexpected, reach beyond to the unimagined, if I can put it like that. Alessandro, what a fantastic conversation and very insightful discussion that we've just had. Thank you so much. It has been brilliant to have it with you.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure to me being with you. And thanks a lot for the good dialogue. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Great to have you with us. This podcast is brought to you by Drop of Milk, an impact-driven business consultancy and expert on customer-focused digital transformation. You can learn more at dropofmilk.com. Thank you.